I didn't think anything would come of it. And they said, oh, we'd like to have you involved in some sort of way, but there's no major roles, but we'll try and get you in if we can. And next thing you know, was a bare knuckle fighter, and one of the main families, and just asked me to be along with it, and they had the likes of Shia LaBeouf in, and I was just like, it's like a dream star. I actually, the first time I went to a gym, everyone strips off, weigh in your boxers, and I was eight, as I say, and I was the only one with triangle brief pants. And I stood up in the group, and like some lads was ripping me that I had like briefs on, like top on the end of the fucking little pockets, got a little Thomas Tank engine or something. Look at the FIs, one of my best friends, Kelly FI, like unbelievable FIs. They don't want to be in the limelight. I love that for them. Like, and I love the lads. Like, they're unbelievable fighters, and they've done what they've done, and they're world champions, and they've absolutely excelled. But look at a lot of people in the Birmingham area at the club and stuff, like. They'll probably know other people like Ryan Kelly more if they're not boxing fans, and different lads around Birmingham, because like they're not out there. Yeah, so I didn't realise how bad it was then until you get older. Well, sadly, I lost my sister 4 years ago, and she'd taken her own life. And I always say now, like, if I didn't quit sport the way I did, what journey would have gone down, and that I was going to the place of not a nice place to be. And you don't know how far you actually have to go to be that.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that will continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.
Morning, mate.
Morning.
How are you?
Yeah, good.
Wicked. Not too bad. Down at the church.
The Mecca.
The Mecca. The Mecca. It's a nice day on a Monday morning.
Unbelievable. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the pitch looked big when it marked.
I didn't even know that. Massive. I remember being down there when I got a picture when I was seven. There was me, David Gold,
yeah.
My dad. And they used to, as a kid, I don't know if they do it now, but you used to be able to buy a signed ball for your birthday.
Yeah.
You used to go down there and then walk you out there at half time. And there was no players, I don't think, at that time for any anyone to have a photo of me. And David Gold come out. I think it was with his daughter or someone, or one of his family members, and had a photo with us. And it was literally with the back of the main stand. And then when I won my title, there was a photographer that took a photo, and it was the exact same angle.
No.
It was like a split screen of like when I was seven and then when I was 23. And I was just like...
Beautiful for your
like,
socials.
Yeah. And and when like...
Was it Roy?
No, what?
Photographer. Is it Roy, the photographer?
Yeah, Roy. Yeah, I've been there years.
Yeah.
But you look back at stuff like that, and if I could have told myself at 7 years of age, the ever ball, like, buzzing to be on the pitch, like, absolutely obsessed, Blues gloves, everything, that when you're 23 years later, you're going to be, like, in the same position with a title as a professional boxer, you'd have been like, oh, that's amazing, do you know what I mean? That's not that back nice.
So was that always a dream from... childhood, when you start boxing?
When I was eight. Yeah, so I was a little kid then. It was before I even started boxing. My dad was a boxer, my uncle was a boxer, my granddad was reserved for the Helsinki Olympics, so it was always in the family. I don't know if I did have a choice, but no, I love boxing. And I actually, the first time I went to a gym, everyone strips off, weigh in your boxers, and I was eight, as I say. And I was the only one with triangle brief pants. And I stood up in the group, and like some lads was ripping me that I had like briefs on. Like top on the end of the fucking little pockets, got a little Thomas Tank engine or something. And now it's like everyone's ripping me from my fucking pants. My mum thought he was like, yeah, he's only little now.
Was that the inspiration that you needed? Is that what drove you off?
We talked about fueling your fire.
Fuel of fire. Water boys.
So I cried. My mum took me home, never going boxing again. Eventually plucked up the courage, she bought me boxers.
Just strutting back in there.
Yeah, strutting back in my boxers, wading. Back to normal, kids still ripping me, and then obviously further down the line, bad them all. That's it. And then I'm the only one that went on the zoo, so I'm thinking my gloves, so there you go.
You should have done that down here with the big pair of Thomas the Tank Engine pants with the belt.
Yeah, so that's a massive memory of me. I'm getting bullied, and then I was like in my Thomas the Tank Engine pants, and then come back. And
that's a lot to get back. That's a lot to get back at that age. Bloody hell!
Well, yeah. I mean,
where was that? Where was you training?
Tamworth. yeah, Tamworth Amateur Boxing Club for, I think it was, I won my first 12 fights. Yeah, because my dad's from Chelmsley, my mum's from Sheldon, and they moved over there. And yeah, it was quite, at that time, my dad had a massive fan-based friends in Chelmsley, and it was the Three Seas, and they had their boxing club. And one of my dad's friends, who he used to box with, son, was my age. And one of my debuts was against his mate's son. And from Tamworth and Chelmsley. So I remember there loads of people being there, like mates and mates, like, ah, oh, Carlson's fighting, it was Eamon Crawford at the time, Eamon's son, Connor. And I beat him, but like, yeah, it was just like all my first fight, and then I had a return. And then I went then to Three Seas at 12, you start boxing.
Yeah.
So I've been training since I was 8, and we boxed, and I beat him again, double. So it was like, and that was my first ever 2 fights. Yeah, and then just went on from there with my first 12.
Well, we're from over them sides, like the Three Seas and stuff like that. So it's the support's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look at Ryan Kelly, like even myself from Challenger, when all my dad's friends, because my granddad used to run Kingshead Amateur Boxing Club, so for years. So my dad always had a lot of friends over there, and the same fans. It's funny because me and Ryan Kelly boxed at the same time, and Ryan used to have fans from there. And he'd be like, oh, fucking hell, so-and-so's coming to my father. Well, I've had their tickets, you know what I mean? Like, it's white never tickets. I mean, Ryan's obviously born there, and so he's got a lot more fan base, but he used to have some lads like buy tickets off me and Bob and Ryan, so a bit of competition.
Brilliant, man. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it was the recent Connor one. Obviously, he lost, but
yeah,
the support there, just from the lads and like Chelmsley lads in the tavern, and just like,
it's, you know,
just
what it is? It's just blues. When blues got fighting, even years ago, when we were cracking and that, and I know there's a lot of trouble in one of the arenas where I was in the NEC, where Birmingham boxing stopped because of that.
To the chairs and all that.
Yeah, chairs everywhere, and the blues lads are, caused a riot. Well, I think Swansea fans as well, but like a massive ruckus, and it stopped boxing in Birmingham for years. And then you had the rise of Sammy Higginson that brought it back. And yeah, I just kind of like honored to be a part of that journey as well. As Birmingham was coming back into the boxing scene, I was on the fan end of it, and just kind of did what I did. And
how did it come about work? Because you worked with Matt Trump, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was a good ticket seller. I had a big fan base at Blues. I think in my first couple of fights, I was like doing 300 tickets, which like it was nice to box at Villa Park at the whole suite, being a Blues fan, coming out to Mr. Blue Sky, all in my Blues kit, like standing there at the whole suite with dum 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 dum, it was unmatched. Like, you can't beat that. Like, it was great. And then I come out, and then I won my, yeah, I'm never lost. So it's great for me. I loved it.
John Pegg seems to be the nucleus of a lot of stuff that we do.
Yeah.
How did you, I know you've had a bit of lot, obviously, dealings with him.
Well, yeah, John was my manager.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, John's great with all his lads. But for me, I pushed myself a lot. Like, John had certain contacts with Matchroom where, oh yeah, I have Charlie. Like, he is basically, yeah, you can have him to be on the show, but you have to push yourself as a brand yourself. A lot of boxers, you can't leave it to just managers. Like, John basically has got a manager's license, and he will match you up. But as a promotional marketing kind of push, they don't really do much. It's just the fight aspect.
Yeah.
And you speak to any of the lads in boxing, managers just literally match you and chat to, say, promoters. But
yeah,
you've got to make yourself as a brand just so they're interested in selling tickets. And like, yeah, you have promoters. So you say like Tommy Owens, like he, great shows for Birmingham, small hall shows, puts lads on the ladder, but they don't really promote. When you say, oh, they're a promoter,
yeah,
they put on a show, but you have to promote yourself singularly to entice people to buy tickets to their show, for then you then to get noticed by Matchroom, to get noticed by other big boxer or Ben Shalom or Eddie Hearn, whoever comes to the city. So yeah, I just feel like boxers need to push their own brand.
It's a bit of a strange one, that is, isn't it? Because unless you are very outgoing, you're obviously a very outgoing person. But if you're not that way inclined and you're quite insulated, but you're a good boxer, you haven't really got a chance, have you, in that respect?
It is a shame. And I said this to, like, look at the FIs, one of my best friends, Cali FI, like, unbelievable fighters. They don't want to be in the limelight. I love that for them. Like, and I love the lads. Like, they're unbelievable fighters, and they've done what they've done, and they're world champions, and they've absolutely excelled. But look at a lot of people in the Birmingham area at the club and stuff. Like, they'll probably know other people like Ryan Kelly more if they're not boxing fans, and different lads around Birmingham, because, like, they're not out there. Which, they're better boxers than all of us. They'll smash everyone, but, like, the marketing side is completely different to the boxing side. And unless you've got that gift of the gab, Conor's got gift of the gab, and he's kind of doing his thing to get out there.
Of course.
You've got to be an exceptional, unbelievable talent. Cal's seven world title defences. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible, and he's earned his money, and he's set up with his family. Unbelievable. But there's that side, and then there's...
Yeah, you're right. These days. You never heard it. No. You've always had shouting from the rooftop. Yeah. They had the dope in the gym, didn't they?
But they don't want you like that. But yeah, that's what I respect about them.
They self-focus on the ability, but that means they have to be exceptional. If you've got other lads who are really, really good, but you never hear about them, then it's kind of like a quandary, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's always a fine balance between being too much and also being talented. I wasn't ever mouthy, I wasn't ever disrespectful to people, but I sold tickets and I knew a lot of people and I got on with people. I weren't the most talented in the room, but I knew. You've got to realise that if you're not as talented as some of the lads that are like or up there, you've got to, in another way, again, to get them opportunities to be put in front of the titles, you've got to sell tickets, you've got to put bums on seats.
Level, aren't you?
Mm. Or turn and see you whining, just lot bits of insulation tape with your nipples covered and
light colour.
Yeah. But that plays into, I switched over briefly the weekend, the Misfits.
Yeah.
I love to hate it. I really love to hate
50 grand. Jordan McCann made 50 grand for that fight.
But they are shouting about not being very good, and they know what they are. So I kind of like, it's like a weird...
But what else is he even doing life within reason?
Yeah.
The whole build, do you know what I mean? It's going down the road now, isn't it, of more notoriety. But before it was kind of minor celeb. Now the whole thing of like the, I know he's been in prison and the press conferences, I can have your family killed and all that. It's not great.
It's pathetic. And I don't like the way they talk, like, especially that I don't even know his name, but chains all over. Like, the way he was talking and that, it's just not good for... It shouldn't be classed as boxing. It should be exhibition fighting.
I don't think people class it as boxing.
Nah, they can't. But
it is. They call it boxing, don't they?
Yeah, and I don't like to class it as boxing because it's not. It's exhibition fighting, an exhibition kind of social media.
How frustrating must it be, though, to people like you who have done the hard yards, and that guy rocks up and he's overweight and he's... trying to do it, and he's biting and he's getting paid 50 grand.
He bit someone.
Yeah.
Out. See ya. Get out. Get out of the ring. He's done it again. And like, but then the ref is then scared of the promotion. So it's like, but it's not even boxing. Like, it's just a big show, isn't it? The WWE. But it's not like the WWE where it's fake. You can get hurt.
Yeah.
You see him, and then afterwards, they're punching each other in the streets. And I like, kids are going to gravitate towards it, aren't they? Because it's sensational. But. Yeah. It seems like it's going to find a point down the line where something's going to happen.
How bad is it going to go? How can it get worse than that show? How can it get? How can that Misfit show get worse than what it was? Like, that's terrible.
It is trash TV.
Well, even like with KSI and the guys that were fighting initially, they were putting training camps in, weren't they? And they were training.
I had to talk to KSI and the Jake Pauls, who were giving it a go. At the start, everyone mocked him, as well as myself, what are they doing? But they've proved that they've tried and had a go in the proper camps. I was in America and I went to Burning Man Festival and I was literally having a walk in the morning and went to grab a coffee. And Jake Paul ran past me at this festival. It was a big music festival, but he was putting it in the desert, a 40-degree heat, just like having a run. And it was on just before his fight with Tommy Fury. So he was literally putting it in when there was a big festival going on, because I've seen, like, do you know what I mean? So people are grafting, but there's people that are not, and they're just taking their money, and they'll never have to graft in it because their mouth sells.
Yeah. So you've got the polar opposites, haven't you? Yeah. To, like you say, people who are going through the ranks and not getting these chances.
But even the lads going through the ranks, like, say, like the small hall lads that have got a British title, they get 10, 20 grand. If they're ticket sellers, they get a bit more. When your tax is taken out of that, 10 grand, so you've got 10 grand left out of 20, then you've got to pay your managers and your coaches, some pay to take 25%. It's like, if your career's over tomorrow, what's that? There's nothing. Like, it's actually pennies, and you're risking your life for 8 grand.
When you, yeah.
It's just the thing. So obviously, you being in plumbing as a trade as well, you know how to make money.
Yeah.
That isn't getting your brain rattled for 12 rounds. So your story is quite, it's really unique, isn't it?
Yeah.
In regards to your career and where you were happy to take it and where you were happy to finish it. So was it just a straight decision with no kind of regret that, right, I'm stepping out?
I had 6 professional fights, a boxing match in twice. I realised that in my 6th fight, like, the love of the sport and the way it was going from a hobby that I loved since I was a kid to a job to, like, I fell out of love with it. The pressure, and it was all myself. I was putting pressure on myself, which I can't blame anybody else. I was putting pressure. I had been expected to win ticket sales, or sponsored by USN, or sponsored by Luke, or sponsored in the end by Grenade. I had all these big sponsors, and they wanted it. They didn't want it for me more than myself. But in my head, I'm like, I've got to keep this up for them to be interested, for me to look good online, for me to sell tickets, me to be marketable, me to win, get on a new Matchroom show. Then you've got to fight. Then you've got to go for a whole camp with all that in there. And over time, that got to me at 23 years of age. So even the 6th fight, I'd had enough. Then I had my 7th. Then it kind of went on and on. And I thought, I'm never going to fight again on my 8th fight. Then I had a phone call off Johnny Pegg saying to my dad, I think French or someone pulled out and you got the opportunity to fight for a Midland title. It's at Villa Park against a lad that's undefeated or lost one in Nottingham, knocked his last 4 opponents out. I'd never knocked no one out because I was 4 journeymen, and as everybody knows in boxing, like, to knock them out, it's harder to do and you're just learning your ropes. So I'd done an 8 rounder against a Polish lad just before that. So I thought, it's my opportunity now to sign out of the sport if I win. And this is my opportunity to just give it my all. Whatever happens, I'm going to finish this sport.
Oh, so that was it?
Yeah.
Or more than ever.
But I was in the change room with my dad just before Midland title. And my dad was like, you're done. Like, this is it. And as soon as, like, that, like, he said that and we spoke about it, I had no worry. And it just proves the pressure that I built on myself was all because it was getting too much. And then I was in the changing rooms and the reporter come up to me, Matt Bozat from Sky, and he was like, I just spoke to your opponent and he said he's going to finish it in the later round. I'm sitting there like, shit, I'm fucking, my nerves are going, he's going to try and knock me out in the later rounds. I'm like, fuck, like, everyone does it. Everyone's in the change room. They think, why am I doing this again? It's the ninth time. Why am I doing this? And then my dad's like, I don't fucking listen to him. Like, you ain't going to get near this, that. Yeah, all right, sweet. Now, nah, it'll be sweet. And then luckily enough, I boxed really well. And I knocked him down in the 5th, knocked him down in the 6th, and finished it in the 8th. And that was it. Then I broke down. I was like, this is me, done, not even. And they had offers to fight like Joe Cordino on the Joshua undercard not long after my Midland title. Because you're a champion, you're a Midland champion. It's the biggest area, British Boxing Board area in the country. Yes. So you're ranked top 5 really within reason, in and around that. So they're going to have you fight Joe Cordino and feed you to the flipping walls. Do you know what I mean? And they'll flash, play big money, 13, 14 grand for a fucking 6 round or 7 round or 8 round or whatever it is. I said, no, don't want it. Don't want it. Offered me that big money. No, don't want it. And that was it. And that was the best decision I ever made in my life.
Did you get a counter offer then? Oh, we like your style. Yeah, go on then, ball.
Nah, gone. Just gone. Just like, best decision I ever made was finish boxing, Midland champion, undefeated, knocked him out in front of all the Blues lads at Villa Park. Done. That was like, it's the best. Like, yeah, and
light drop. Because to be fair, because he didn't want it, didn't have to on that last.
Knife. I knew straight, because actually I hit him with a body shot at the same time he hit me with a body shot, and I remember him hitting me, and I thought, "Fuck, I'm fucked there." Like my lung like collapsed a little bit off, but he was down, and I was like, I went and watched the video back. I'm not that, I'm the fucking ropes. I'm like, don't fucking stand up. I beg you, don't forget. Because I thought, I knocked him down 2 times before and I looked at him, I thought, don't get back up. Don't fucking get back up. He got back up. He got back up again. And I was like, don't get back up. And he didn't. And as soon as he went on this and shook his head, the ref, I was like, yes, that's fucking unbelievable.
What's that feeling like?
Ah, like, it's just a relief that I went through before that as well. I was having sleepless nights. I was getting up at flipping 7 o'clock for work. Like, everyone has to work at that. Like, there's no box at everyone's small shows unless they've got a load of dough that doesn't have to work. It's like any type of sports person trying to make it in a sport where you have to work and earn to live. So they're just holiday funds, boxing fights. But yeah, it was just like unbelievable. Just it's done.
Did you have, so was you established as a plumber then, and you as I say, you weren't going for boxing for the money, so you were just like, was it affecting your work? You were turning up black eyes at customers and sparring all.
Never got it.
No.
Never really got it.
Wait, that's what you wanted.
That's what I left.
That's what you want.
That's it. Let's go on.
Most unique boxing career ever. No one laid a glove on you. We tore the champion.
Yeah. I was an apprentice from 16, qualified at 19, still doing it through my boxing. And it gave me a chance to, I was still living at home, no bills. So it was giving me a chance to, I used to go up to North because before my Midland title, I was sparring Josh Warrington. I was sparring all these top lads. I used to blow all these lads to, like, I'm one of them. Whatever I do in life, whether it's flipping paddle that I'm trying now, I'm trying to play against like the best you can just so I can be better. And I was sparring Josh Warrington. He was tough. He was great. Like, great experience. I'm still good friends with Josh now. And just put you in good stead for the journey.
Yeah, some calibre of opponent that, isn't it? What was he like to spar?
Just relentless, tough. Power-wise, like, obviously your sparring is completely different, but you're just relentless. Bang, 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 bang. And you'd be here for Cole France and like all the top lads. Like, he's boxed Mal Beatley, Selby in the end. And what a career. Do you know what I mean? What a career he's had. And a lovely kid from Northern, just top, top, top lad.
How hard was it to Mike White generally?
Hard. There's no box.
It's like you're grafting as well. So I was imagining your diet's a grafter's diet.
Diet's the worst. Because I used to go from 10.5 stone down to 9 stone 3. He's a sweat out like 9-10 pound. Everyone don't tell you that. Everyone's like, oh yeah, I'll do it right, bollocks. Like, everyone sweats out a lot, do you know what I mean? Unless you're that tannage, you don't even need to cut weight and you just stay the weight above. But everyone gets down, do you know what I mean? Everyone looks like a skinny cracker.
How are you at that point in your camp where you're dropping the weight? How are you going to work and not getting hangry and dizzy? And
you do?
Yeah.
Because notoriously, if you're on the road, you're like, I'll snack and I'll stop at the services.
Nah,
you
so you're not there. Walking out and some customer's going, wasn't that pipe work meant to be straight? And you're like, yeah, no, I'm cutting myself.
Honestly, it's hard. Like, having a job, like, and I think I'm quite a positive person in life. And I think going through that as a kid, like, and running since I was 8, on the roads, dieting at 12. I remember being like, it's mad, and I didn't even know this was a thing, but I remember having a fruitcake at my nan's, being told I can't have it, which I knew I couldn't have because I was in the championships, and actually going to the toilet and sicking the cake back up and telling no one, because that's the only way I know for a fact that I get the taste, I love it, and I sick it back up.
So you got the taste and no weight?
No weight, done. I go back into the gym the next day and coach just be like, oh, sweet, I'm weight, bang, that works. And wow. Then, but that's not like bulimia where it's like, oh, I want it to look like this. But no one told, I didn't know what bulimic was, I didn't know what, but I used to think, sorts me out.
Do you think that's quite a commonplace thing in kids?
I've only started talking about that this last year because I thought, oh, fucking hell, I used to do that. I used to make myself sick when I had a cake at my nan's, where I didn't use the fucking put weight on the next day. My dad didn't know, my mum didn't know. I used to think, fuck it, that's sweet. Like, it was a cheat code.
Yeah.
It was a cheat code to box and have my weight down and also have nice food. But obviously, as you get older, you need the nutrition. You need fuel in your muscles. That kid, you didn't know that as a kid. No. You just thought weight was the only thing that mattered.
Yeah.
Which, as a kid, like...
Did you find that when you were... So, being from a boxing disciplined family anyway... Like, when we had Don Broadhurst, and he was saying he struggled to cook. He's cutting nearly a stone, but he didn't have any kind of guidance with nutrition or anything from his management or his team.
Nah.
Does anyone?
Nah.
It's quite a thing, isn't it?
I had,
nutrition and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I was sponsored by USN. And one of the guys there, Carl, great guy, and he set me up a plan to lose weight. Perfect. Food, perfect. But the fuel I had in my body, it's not enough. It was like a weightlifting kind of... diet where they usually look after weightlifters, but you got to have the fuel. And I always speak to people now, people have like, the girls have 1,200 calories in their diet to try and lose weight. it's not enough. You need 16, as your body will hold on to the stuff when you do eat.
Like, it's counterproductive.
Yeah, it's counterproductive. And people don't realise that. People are like, if I don't eat, then I'll be sweet. But then as soon as you do eat, it holds on to everything. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's that fine balance. Yeah. So I know a lot about that. And all my life, I've done nutrition. It's mad, really. You know, so much. Every other boxer will know their body like that.
Yeah. You spoke about the sleepless nights and the anxiety and stuff. And you publicly spoke about mental health.
Yeah.
Which is obviously just massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did you think it was important for you to come out as a and talk about it?
I showed so much light in my boxing, mental health. And it weren't really a big thing then. Like, you're just like, I'm stressed. I'm just like...
It's a lonely sport in the world, isn't it?
We're so lonely. Like, no one's... I remember, like, in Midlands, everyone goes out on the piss after. Just me and my dad in the change room. I'm pissing black. I remember having, like, real dark wee, and I'm like, this is like... What's it doing? Get what I mean? What was the question?
Just about your mental health.
Yeah. So
you spoke out about it.
Yeah, yeah. So
you just went straight back to that.
You were still
you traveled straight back to staring at that toilet bowl.
Yeah. I didn't realise how bad it was then until you get older. Well, sadly, I lost my sister 4 years ago, and she'd taken her own life. And I always say now, like, if I didn't quit sport the way I did, what journey would have gone down, and that I was going to the place of not a nice place to be. And you don't know how far you actually have to go to be that. So it's not nothing positive, but something that I've took away from her passing was realizing, like, I was so blessed that I stepped away from the sport when I did, because my life's unbelievable and I love my life. And you never know, you go for English titles, you go for all these higher things, the pressure's more, the rewards are higher, but the losses are more. Look at Ricky Hatton, look at people that are at that height. Look at Sammy Higginson, now done all of it. He's going to be sitting at home and now he's retired. Like, it's hard, man. And I didn't really want to get to that. Yeah. I loved my job. I love being a plumber. Like, boxing was a great stepping stone for stuff that I'm doing now, my acting. So, it's just, it made me realise that not everything in life is about sport.
But it's nice and it's refreshing to hear again, because the amount of kids that will be training in that path at the moment where, again, like you say, it's a lonely life at times for a boxer.
Yeah.
All your friends come and watch. They go on the piss. You're not on the piss with them. You fight. You get the shit kicked out of you. They all go into town and carry on the piss.
Yeah.
You're left win, lose or draw.
Yeah.
So it's nice for kids to hear from someone that's been a champion.
Yeah.
It's all right to feel, you know.
Yeah, and one of the lads now... Braden Dyer, shout out to Braden. He's like from a local town, he's Four Nation champion, done all you can as an amateur, as a young kid going into the seniors and stuff soon. So for him, it's just about enjoying it. Like, honestly, it's just enjoyment, because as soon as I knew that enjoyment was gone, I had to leave. Like, it went from like why he's doing what everyone was doing, like enjoying it as a hobby. As soon as you get that pressure and that building, it naturally comes. Like, you've got to love it and love it and love it to get and train and have that much sacrifice, and when that drops, you've got to leave it, really.
That's what Don said, wasn't it? Because he had such a poor performance on telly when he'd done the show, but all of a sudden the calls weren't coming to come back again.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Don more than myself. I wasn't expected to do anything. Frankie Gavin expected to do this. Don expected to do that. I wasn't expected to do it. I put my expectation on myself. Them lads that was unbelievable amateurs, if they're not world champions, they've failed. They was at world level. Like, and I feel for them, because they will sit back now and look and be like, oh, if only I'd have done this, only I'd have done that. As a young lad, you can't give a shit. But when you look back, it's regret if you don't.
That's what we have there, yes.
So I was expected to do nothing. I turned professional to have one professional fight. Won Boxer Eddie Hearn twice. Met unbelievable people. Really good friends with a lot of people at the Birmingham City Football Club. Friends with a lot of people in hype and sports that I admire, and now my friends. I'm a plumber. See you later. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I enjoy my life.
So flip around, isn't it? Because there's a lot, the lad that's is some European champion now, isn't he? The electrician that got the shite to
Padley.
Josh Padley.
Yeah.
And he went the other way, didn't he? Got the call. Do you want to fill in?
He must love it. Mm. It's hard, but like, he's got to love it at that stage. Do you know what I mean? And there's money there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's gone straight into the into the money, hasn't he?
Yeah, so it's... And is it the end of career? It's his last go.
It's mad, how many avenues there are to get in at different times, and you can just find yourself in that position. But so on the flip side, well, not the flip side, but on the... So moving on then, you talked about acting. So first of all, how is that in comparison to getting punched in the face and training and 5 a.m. runs?
Lovely. Do you know what? It gives me that sense of performance. It gives me that sense of performance without getting punched in the face. Like acting for me.
It's got to be good not getting punched in the face.
Well, I never got punched in the face anyway.
No, no, are you?
Remember that?
Yeah.
Just inspiring. But
you probably get it more now than you when you're crop to five.
But yeah, just something that randomly came into my head where, I'd done a commercial for Bet365, a boxing commercial. 3-1, Ray Winston, 3-1, next person to get knocked out.
Right, the tribal silhouette.
Yeah, the silhouette type. And I did that. I got paid well. And I was like, you know, everything's like all my clothes are laid out. Everything was like, this is a bit of me. Like, I ain't going back to plumbing. Like, and I'll tell anyone, it was $2,500. I was there for the day. Done. I was thinking, I made it. This is it. Like, it's easy. Like, they think, like, I can do boxing. I can do this. I can do commercials. Yeah. Little did I know, it's fucking really hard to do that all the time.
Everyone else is thinking the same thing.
Yeah. And I've done that 45 years ago, and I ain't had a commercial since. But I'm in it, so let's ride it. So I joined Netflix Acting for Screen Class in Birmingham. Esther Stanford, she's brilliant. Like, if anyone's into acting and wants to get into it, Esther's brilliant. I wanted to learn about the camera and commercial and stuff like that. And I kind of, like, didn't realize how hard it was. To give me a script. Wanted to learn a script. I don't want to learn a script. I just want to do camera work, naive, and I just want to get paid for doing hardly anything, looking pretty on the camera, doing boxing, done.
Yeah.
It's not like that. And I went away, broke down the script, got told what I had to do. 12 weeks later, I fell in love with reading the scripts every week, character breakdown, being somebody I'm not, being out of my person, trying to like zone in. And I had a bit of savings, and I went out to New York Film Academy in Los Angeles and done an intensive 10-day course there. Passed and really enjoyed it. And actually, the agent that I wanted from Manchester, I applied for them before I went to America, just as I started. Oh, rep me. And they're like, wow. What would you give you representation? You got nothing to show. You've done one commercial. It's like, no. I said, okay. So I went away, done that. Come back, said, I've done this course. I've acted now for 6 months. I'm really trying. I've got my show reel, like, any chance? And they pulled me in and said, yeah. But they pulled me in as a commercial actor because I've had no acting background. And then, a year later, I had a call, a message from a friend, Ward, who's a producer in London. He's a blues fan. One of his producer friends was being part of this film, and also Ian Dutton messaged me with this poster saying, oh, there's this boxing film, Bjorn Franklin, his mum and dad used to sponsor the football club, I think, and was fans of the club, and knew Ian, was like, I can put a word in, I'm not sure if it'll help, but he's the director of a film, blues fan, and that was that. And I didn't think anything would come of it, and they said, we'd like to have you involved in some sort of way, but there's no major roles, but we'll try and get you in if we can. And next thing you know, it was a bare knuckle fighter, and one of the main families, and just asked me to be along with it, and they had the likes of Shia LaBeouf in, and I was just like, it's like a dream start. And
what's LaBeouf like? Geezer.
Century.
Is it Geezer?
Proper, so respectful.
Yeah.
Once respectful. What a guy, like, to me, to everyone on set, respectful, great. But he's been a superstar for years. As you can imagine, you can only naturally see someone that's got a certain type of ego in certain environments, which people ramming cameras in his face all the time.
He's a superstar now.
Superstar. Yeah.
But like you said, on that one day, you're getting everything done for you, and everyone's all over you. Yeah. He's been doing that for
forever,
30 years.
So when then people see him doing certain things, that's all he's used to. So when he's not getting that, it's like, well, I should be. See what I mean? And then he gets classed as egotistic and that, but his life's not going to be the same on the Joe Bloggs who goes to the social club every night. Joe, it's different. But having Shia LaBeouf and Cole Frotch together on set at break time and having lunch, the conversations.
See, it's Kebble as well.
Toby Kebbell, main cast. Yeah, he was in Rocamola.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. But yeah, so you've got all these big egos, like more for soccer as well, from This Is England. He's just been on the cage, showing us something, like, unbelievable actor, an even better guy. I still speak to him now and he gives me advice, and like proper down-to-earth guy. So it was a very family-knit kind of down-to-earth set, even from like the director. The casting director was married to the director, Ashlyn, like very much like...
Where was he shot?
Penarth, Wales. Yeah. Okay. But going back to like Frotch and Shia on set, you got Frotch saying the earth is flat and Shia's like, no, it's not. Da, 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 da. Like, there's that much ego, that like, not aggressive, but like they're both very high ego.
Oh, is he an avid flat earth or is that?
Who? Frotch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have a conversation with Frotch, you'll have. And like,
we're sitting down here once on a Q&A live audience thing, and he started going off, and you could see everyone just going, what?
Lost him.
Just it was halfway through. People are like, and he's.
But yeah, that, you know what?
Another like, time, man.
I fucking love Frotch. Like, you feed him something, and Frotch will go and like have a conversation, very knowledgeable about flipping loads of things. But if he's him and Shia opinionated together, fucking hell, like bam, 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 yeah. Like they're friends and like they spend a lot of time with each other, but them two together, like having a conversation. And if you don't agree with something, that'll tell you why you should agree with it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you're just like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're all flat earth as well at the end, then, yeah, fine, Carl, yeah, yeah. There's a wall in Antarctica, you can't get past it, you'll fall off, yeah.
Yeah, but then. You agree with them, and they'll be like, yeah, but what didn't you agree before? So basically, so that's how it goes, and like...
Wouldn't you agree with me quicker?
Yeah. Well, no, they're good lads, and it was an incredible experience. Like,
how long was the shoot?
Mine was 3 days. And yeah, it's one of them where you get asked to... Yeah, you cast, and then they'll be like, have you got a base in Wales? If you say no, they've got to pay to put you up, so you ain't going to get it. So I'm like, yeah, got a base in Wales. Like, what I got paid, I then paid on an Airbnb.
Travel like in Cardiff. Yeah, yeah, I got
didn't get paid for it, but like, yeah, well, I did. But I had to pay my Airbnb out of it. It's not for that. Like,
to the greater good.
Some people have been like, oh, unless I'm getting paid. I wanted to be on set, have an experience. That'll live with me until I'm in the grave.
It was like, did you see the discourse around the art director of that mob session? So it's all over social media, that film it's... They made it for 750k and it's just done 200 million or something. Right, okay. American horror film, independent. Yeah. But the art director put out a thing saying, I only got this a day out to do these many hours. And then everyone's polled in, basically, and this is how you get where you want to get. You either do it for the love, and then other people saying, but you still need to pay the bills.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a mad thing in the arts, isn't it? Yeah. More so movies where... It's not a daily rate. It's not like you're a plumber. You know, you can go and get 300 quid a day, do whatever. It's not that, is it?
No, no. It's there's a lot riding on. So obviously there's a lot of controversy around Shia as well with his personal life, and that stops production sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, it holds productions and sales. Certain Netflix won't work with certain people, like not just Shia, like I'm not just singling him out, there's loads of other people, like
also,
yeah, you have a
publicity in it that would be tarnished
if you have someone that's just done a film and then 6 months later they're in the news after it's been shot, they didn't know what's happening, that they've done this and it's going to look bad on the film. Netflix say no, Paramount will say no, Apple will say no.
Why?
Fuck the whole production up. So you have got to be careful of who you're casting certain things, because...
But they sell the film.
I was going to say, I suppose if they are behaving well, though, you've got the notoriety. The notoriety.
Yeah. So you say, I've got Charlotte. Yeah,
so the film gets made because they're in it, but then potentially doesn't get released because they're in it.
Well, this is the thing, yeah?
Yeah.
So there's a massive... But then if they're really, like, squeak clean in life, everyone's going to want them. Cool. So then you're going to struggle to get them. So to get them, you need someone that's a bit...
Yeah.
So no one uses them, but also...
Do you know what I mean? Tom Hardy was years ago, weren't he?
Yeah.
Well, that was, to be fair, so that was same with... what do you call it, wasn't it? Gangs of London. What's the one on that they're doing the second series of?
Not Mobland.
Mobland,
yeah.
Same thing, weren't it? Saying that the waiter, he only does what he wants when he wants, whatever else. And apparently Helen Mirren wouldn't work with him. Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, Helen Mirren, I know about Helen Mirren. What's wrong with Helen Mirren?
Like, Shia said that Tom Hardy is the best actor he's ever worked with. Over everyone.
Yeah.
And like, it just shows them characters bring out the most internal, the traumas they go through, the life experiences they have through life, create the best actors. And a lot of kids that come through drama school now wouldn't have had the life experiences I've had.
Yeah.
I can tap into different things that they can't. And I think it's going on to now that I'd like to touch on, it's like working class actors coming through.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing to have working class actors coming through and not just from drama school.
Yeah.
And I support working class actors till the end. Like,
it's quite elitist though, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
I think with drama schools, Pauline Quirk Academy, notoriously very good, very expensive.
Yeah.
Drama schools like that. Unless you are, so a couple of my mates and I've dabbled into film and stuff, it's to get those kids to do their showreels sometimes,
yeah.
That's the way forward, isn't it? To get the showreels out there. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you have been to drama school. And
Definitely not. And everything I've done through my boxing got me that role. Whatever you're doing now is going to put you in good stead for 10 years time. And kids, anyone kids that are watching it, need to realise whatever you're doing now is for the future. Yeah. And for everything I'm doing in acting now is for 4 years time, 5 years time, 6 years time, 10 years time, when I'm going to have more experience, then opportunities come, I'll be ready. Like everything that I was doing for my boxing, without knowing, is helping me now through knowing people to be in a film, to do this. And then now I've got them contacts. Everything from them is going to be put me in good position for like years. And that's how it works over time. And nothing's overnight. Because if you get an opportunity now that you're ready for in 4 years, they're going to look at you and not give you the opportunity and be like, right, he's not ready. And then that opportunity and that contact will be gone forever.
Yeah.
So he's got to be at the right time.
We see it now, don't you, with the new people that are coming through. That Martin Ford has just gone boom, hasn't he? Because of what he's been in.
I mean, yeah, but like, again, like, I'll be honest.
He's been putting it in over the years, though, you see. And you look at his IMDb and he's been...
He has been putting it in over the years. But like, not many people speak great of Martin Ford. And it's how you treat people, do you know? And there's a lot of people I know that have spoken to Martin Ford and not been that, like, felt like he was nice to them in certain ways. And I know a lot of people that know him. And I've reached out and just blanked it. And I was starting acting. I messaged him, I'm starting acting, any tips, any this? And read it off, didn't even reply. He knows me, he knows certain people. Like, I'll never be that. Do you know what I mean? Just be good to people and hope it comes back around. And it helps that he's 6 foot flipping 20. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's got this presence, so he doesn't need to do it, but I'd rather be a good
person. You meet people on the way up, but on back on the way down. It's that little saying kind of thing, but... It's going back. So, how far are you away from Peaky Blinders? That's the question I want to know. Did you get a call to be invited along for auditions, or is it a little bit kind of no?
No. Look, so I got an agent in Manchester.
You've got the look, man.
Do you know what? Like, everyone says this, but I've never been picked up for it, and this is one thing that I've never met Stephen Knight. I should do really with the amount of people that know the blues, but I've never met him. I'd love to be involved with Stephen's project, especially coming to Birmingham. Shaheen Baig, the casting director for Peakies, and works closely with Stephen Knight. She's from Birmingham, and I've never met them both, but then you got 1,000 Blows that he wrote with Stephen Graham. And that's a boxing film. Didn't even get looked at. So unless you're seen, you can't get anything. Like, and I'm a boxer from Birmingham, and I've never been seen for any fight or boxing thing through that avenue. And it's mad they go to London.
No, you're going
to... Hopefully, yeah.
Stephen.
That's the thing.
Stephen Knight watches every episode.
Well, my daughter does the thing at Grace Academy.
Yeah.
Not Grace, John Emery Newman.
Yeah.
The stage school.
Grunge. Yeah.
It's not Grunshaw anymore. That's old money. Yeah. John Emery Newman. But yeah, but even like dealing with them, it's, okay, the mention is something coming up. Okay, yeah, can I put a name forward? Yeah. Something the other week. But then you don't hear back. So then I'll drop one then. Oh, I'm just chasing up. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That'd have been in touch. Oh, so you don't even get like an email. Thank you for your...
I ride 120 emails a year to casting directors. Could we get 2-3 replies? But that's fine because I narrow this down because, not for mental health because I'm fine, but for your mental state as an actor, I've got an email tracker that tracks the emails and tells me if they've opened it.
Yeah.
If they've clicked my social media links, if they've clicked my spotlight, which is like the engine where you put all your acting stuff on for them to see. if they've seen it and they've clicked on it, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
They've seen me. If they wanted to contact me, they would. If not, then they haven't. That's fine. You have to have an element of what would be able to be and what's main for you when past your by. So,
you'd have a thick skin as well, wouldn't you?
I think that comes from my boxing. Like, it's a matter of fact. Like, if you're right for it, you're right. If you're not, you're not. Mm. Same with that boxing film that I was in. I was right for it. I played a travelling bare knuckle fighter. I kind of got that look. There's no better person for that look. And there is, but I was in the right place at the right time. And certain people who respect me and like me put me forward and kind of give me that opportunity. I'm grateful for that. And something could happen like that again in the future. But yeah. For now, it's like, jump back on the horse and just keep plugging away. And
yeah, and you've gone there and you've been sane and you've been yourself and yeah. You've been likeable, no doubt. And so that lasts a long time as well, doesn't it?
That lasts more than anything.
The problem you've got sometimes, you hear the horror stories, particularly of casting directors and people like that, that are against the grain. And I've heard stories, you've probably heard the same, where they just get the people who are auditioning, they're like, let's just halve that straight away, they're gone. Then what, because there's that many.
Yeah.
You need good casting directors. Because that's a dying art as well, because it's a long, monotonous, kind of laborious task of going through people to auditions.
So. I genuinely think there's also, with acting, there's a thing of, like, if you've got a project, I don't know if you know of, like, different agents, but the biggest agents in the country, Curtis Brown, I would say, independent. If you've got a project, obviously, they have to be good, but if you've got four actors that are all really good, and on your rap sheet, you're going to put this profile, you're going to put this film to get funded by a big production, Netflix, and you've got four actors, one actor that's all actors, unbelievably talented. It's going to look better on your sheet if you've got someone from independent than someone as an agent who isn't seen.
Is that how it works? Yeah.
Well, it gets funding. It looks better. Yeah. It's a package. It's got to look good.
Yeah.
And that's from boxing, selling tickets, with your kit, with your social media, with everything that's like all the glitz and glam to portray yourself. Not something that you're not, but you've got to fake it till you make it within a reason. And I think that's in any industry, not just acting. Yeah. But with me now, with my social media, I used to put photos on years ago, on holiday, this, that. It's my CV. I want to show what I'm doing acting, speak to people, with you guys, show who I am as a person, and that all puts jigsaw puzzles in to create the full picture.
Right in a circle.
And I think that's what really social media should be used for these days, to help you push on to people to understand you in that industry.
Yeah.
How do you find self-tapes?
Fine, yeah. Yeah. Just
stick. They've gone mental since lockdown, haven't they?
But it's great, but it's so much better for me because I'm Midlands. It's great. London, like, I've gone for casting in London. Drove 2 hours, bit a biscuit, looked into the distance, and it's a nice biscuit for a commercial. Thank you, yeah, no problem. Out, back to the home. Literally that. I remember having a biscuit. Can you stand on the mark? Yes, no problem. Thanks, Charlie. Tell me your age, your name, your agent. Yeah, fine. Right, when you pick that biscuit to the side, like you're looking out to the seaside, bite your biscuit, look round, and go, perfect. It's great. Thank you. Thank you for that.
When you could literally do that on a table.
Straight home.
Was it at least a nice biscuit?
2 hours.
Shit.
Weren't even a biscuit. It would pretend.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'm grateful for self-tapes because I've done so many. I've auditioned for some great auditions recently. And I just do it in my room. But then you get to 100 people instead of 20 in the room.
Yeah.
So there's more to pick from.
I think from a casting point of view, it's probably easier to instantly switch it on within 10 seconds. I think you'd probably know, wouldn't you? Or you'd be like, shortlist. No.
I think if you want to get into the industry, the biggest thing is a network. Got to have a network. Honest, unbelievable actors in Birmingham. And they'll never be seen. And it's such a shame. They've got no profile, no nothing. That's just a real shame. And if I ever do get somewhere and I've got a profile, I'd love to bring every one of them through because it's like, they're unbelievable actors, they need to be seen. And it's crazy how there's a lot of actors that want to be on camera, be actors, but don't want to be seen.
Yeah.
And I think that's backwards for me. It's like, if you're an actor and you're on camera, people should know about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't know how to promote and don't know how to market. I think that's come from my boxing background. And again, it's what I did with my boxing has put me in great stead for my acting because now I can promote myself as an actor exactly how I did as a boxer, and that's how I got that role.
Yeah.
If I didn't put myself out there like I did, I wouldn't have got it.
You can't be an introvert. You've literally got to sell the products, ain't you?
But you go back to what you said earlier. There are actors that are introverts that can't actually be themselves and talk about themselves in, oh, I'm great and stuff, but you put a script in front of them and they're unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Look at Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Prime example. Doesn't want to be on any socials anywhere. Unbelievable actor. But then I'm nowhere near as talented as him, so it's like, I need to do that side to then get on to that side.
Yeah.
So everyone's got different journeys. Everyone's different. That's how the world works.
What's the dream?
The dream.
So short term, 12 months.
Yeah.
What would be an ideal role for you? And Peaky Blinders would be amazing. Wouldn't it?
Incredible to be involved in Peaky Blinders. I'd like to be seen more by Sheen Bay, who's from Birmingham, for auditions. I've never been seen by her. I've been seen by the biggest casting offices in the country for smaller roles and different things, and not her. So I would love to be seen, because that's the next step. You be seen by them if you're not right for it. Win the room and not the role. That's what I always say. Like, you get put in front of these offices, you win the role and not the room, because if you're not right for that, it's fine. As long as you're a good person, as long as you can do the job that I ask, break down a script and perform it how you truthfully feel it is, they'll pull you in again if they think you're right for something else. You keep doing that, and over time, 5 years' time, they're like, won't even get you to tape. That's him. That's him. We've seen him 5 times. That's him. And there you go. You do the audition. You got it. And I think for me in the next 12 months, I want to be... saying peaks and different things like that, but you just want to be around good people in the industry and push on, and that then you get rewarded for being a good person and being around it.
Do you know Kevin McDonough? I'll put you in touch with Kevin McDonough. He's one of my friends. He's the locker director. He's directed a few feature films. Do you know Damien Gallagher?
I don't know.
So there's a few names that, and they're just doing the same thing. And like you said, Scott Atkins as well. Do you know, he's done Avengement. Yeah, the teeth in Avengement with the prison. It's a good film, that.
There's so many, like...
Yeah, so they're Midlands, but he's moved to LA now. But literally just in the right place at the right time. And like you say, if a role comes up, we're like...
Yeah, 100%.
Charlie. Yeah.
And Birmingham stick together. And this is what we love about Birmingham, whether you're outside the world. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's how I got in this film. Blues. And, so yesterday night,
and again, it's what we were doing, was celebrating people who were from Birmingham. So we're shouting and trying to get it across, and shout about the region. Really,
and what I love about Stephen and what they're doing is like they're bringing it back to Birmingham. Yeah. It's not like anyone else where London. They're bringing it back to Birmingham, and a massive thing that Blues in with the ground and Stephen Knight and everyone that's involved. They're bringing things back to Birmingham. We had the budget, the art cuts from Birmingham, like before. Like, we need the creative arts to come back to Birmingham, and Stephen Knight's helping that. So to be involved in that would be a dream. To be not even, I don't even want to meet Stephen to be like, oh, give me a role, because it's not about that. It's, I'd love to be involved maybe in a project with Stephen Knight and people that are around him and Birmingham City to, give a foundation for working class actors, full stop.
He's been vocal about that himself, hasn't he? There's definitely be like a pathway and a conversation there. Yeah. Because like you said, with the rejuvenation of Birmingham with the Lock Studios, and like you say, the irony that the cut arts, but then they all fawn over Steve, and then because all of a sudden he's brought all this money in from Peaky Blinders, is a little bit ironic. But yeah, there should definitely be a conversation around how you've got this beautiful big city full of people.
Yeah.
It's like actors.
And it only takes a few influential people within that industry to like be involved, 4 or 5 people to create open doors for kids that haven't got money, that disadvantaged backgrounds in Birmingham. Like, there's a lot of that, and kids they don't feel like they've got a pathway in acting because it feels like it's a drama school type of thing to do, like, and it's not. So if Stephen can bring that to Birmingham, I'd happily help and be involved in something that brings stuff for kids. Like, it's great.
It's exactly what Knight had to do down here, isn't it, as well, with bringing the community in. And it's just a good time to be in Birmingham, I think, at the moment.
Macbeth. Tread the boards.
You what, sorry?
Gonna tread the boards.
Theatre.
I spoke to Toby Cable about this on set, and he said, Charlie, get into theatre. I live over the back end... do Stratford Plavin around that way now, and there's not much going on, like classes and stuff like that. I'd like to get involved a little bit, but probably more stage work where it's not so much Shakespeare. I learned Shakespeare in LA when I did a bit of that. Like, it's just not, you can pick up some tools from learning it to then put into screen acting and stuff. But I think I would if the right thing come along. Mm. I'd like to get into, yeah, I've seen some great theatre performances that aren't like that, but aren't Shakespeare.
Well, I was shocked. Mamma Mia, the musical, the other night, my daughter, and it was absolutely brilliant.
But, like, they're all brilliant. Mm. All these theatres that you go to, you see, it's actually fucking really good. Get the flow down.
Don't go enough. Yeah. I just want to see him as Avenue Q, but I'm right. That's just similar like that. And
yeah.
But yeah, again, it's got to be right for you, hasn't it?
It's got to be right for
me. And if someone comes up, they're like, well, why not? Go and have a look at it.
But yes.
It depends. You never know what angle, like, what direction it's going to take you in acting.
And that's what, Lars, like, you never know. I will speak to, like, Paul Robinson. I'm really close with Robbo and his missus and the family and we're close friends. She always says to me, Caroline, like, you never know who you're going to meet. We all say to each other, it's like a web. She talks about the web. It's like you meet someone there and, like, someone knows someone. Like, be good to people. Put it out there to the universe and it comes back around and you never know who you're going to meet. And there's a beautiful thing to tell. You can go one way, like, oh, I don't know who I'm going to meet. I'm never going to get far, I don't know. Yeah. Or I don't know who I'm going to meet. Like, I can't wait. You're
excited about it.
Yeah, there's two different ways to look at everything.
Yeah.
So if you can put that out there to the universe and be positive, it's like, you never know.
Well, who'd have thought the guy who was doing that Pepsi Bismol advert?
Yeah.
Diarrhea. You know what I mean? Mom, I've made it. He's probably one of the most famous advert.
Or you were doing a podcast at the Blues Ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
Made it.
Yes. So just wrapping up then.
Yeah.
Unless you've got anything else you want to ask? Uh-huh. No. So when people look back and they look back at your story from the boxing and the acting and stuff, what I know you've spoke about it, but what would you like to portray that people know you as and in and around kind of your personality?
Just a good person. Do you know, as I've grown up, I've seen so many people in all different industries, push agendas and try and be like, oh, like, you can just, people skills just ain't got it, and they're you can as long as people look back at me and be like Josh is a good kid, he's fucking sound, he's loyal, and I'd help anybody out if they ever fucking needed it, like anything. Do you know what I mean? And as long as you're a good person and you do good for people, that's all I'm bothered about. And if I'm known for my sport, I can help people. Do you know what? I like to help people. If anything in acting, like if someone's struggling or even message my social media, there's always advice on the table. And like, I'm good at giving advice. Sometimes I'm not good at giving it myself. But like, if you can help someone 1%, like it's great. Like,
here's a question then, just off the script. So your profile rises.
Yeah.
Say you do get like a Peaky Blinders, something establishes you, and then misfits come because you've got this profile now.
Yeah.
You're a little bit mean for me that way. Would you ever put the gloves back on and go and fill him one of these?
Do you know what? Like, I just know it's not my passion. I've done it. I've done boxing to death. I've done it since I was 8 till 23. Like, that's a long time. And the lads that I grew up with doing it are still doing it now. Fucking no.
You're going to see a Love Island kid for
scars everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't want to. Do you know what I mean? Like,
we can get this to Man Asylum. I mean, we've had a couple of the girls on.
Really? Got,
yeah. Yeah, okay, man.
Well, money's money, isn't it? And yeah. I'll splatter them all, but I'd rather splatter someone on set.
Yeah.
Like, my passion and like how I am now, I suppose my passion is like acting and to be on set and really enjoy loving what I do. And again, it's a hobby because it's not a job. Whether that changes as it becomes a job, I don't know. Same as my boxing, I didn't know, but you got to go through these things. That's what I want to do. That's what my passion is. It keeps me focused away from my work when it needs to be. And acting and work keeps me focused away from acting. So it's like, it works really well that I've got that going on and that going on. And I'm quite ADHD where I need a lot of stuff going on. So, I feel like boxing was great for then. And it helped.
It was a time.
Yeah, it was a chapter where a lot of people are scared to let go of chapters because they're like, that's it, done. Oh, we've got fucking hundreds of chapters in our life. Like, you'll know yourselves as life. You'll do, without learning in one chapter, you won't be as good as you are in this chapter. And like, it's okay. And you've got to accept that things go, relationships, friendships, jobs, sports, like what you were doing at 16 is not what you're doing now, but you're doing podcasts. You'd never dream of doing that when you were younger. And I feel like it's okay to realize that whatever you want to do in that moment doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it in the future.
Did you find it easy, friends, family around you? You're like, right, I want to do this now and be active. Is everyone just like, yeah, brilliant, supportive? Was anyone like, oh, that's not really for you? Can't see you doing that.
Do you know what is funny? When I started, as I was a professional and I started putting myself out there, everyone in my local area, oh, he thinks he's doing this, he thinks he's doing that. Never disrespect to anyone. Never give it loads, egotistic. Never like, oh, I'm the best, I'm this. I'm never that. But people don't like to see it. Until you're doing well, then they start to then recognise, oh, he's not stopping. So we might as well support him.
And it's, this is it's a happens. Weird thing.
It's a weird thing. Like people don't support you unless you're doing well. And when I went, I think by the time I started acting, people had seen me. I'd done my boxing. Then I passed my pilot license. I got a pilot license. I'm all doing something. I'm always doing something. Try to create brands. Try to do this. So the time my acting come, people are probably like, fuck me, it's just another thing. And accepted it because that's how I am as a person. And people probably didn't really support. But then when my film come out and like, you're trying to do this, trying to do that, people realise, oh, he's not fucking about again. He's doing it. And I think just, that's, if I'd listened to everybody's opinions, I'd have done absolutely nothing. And follow your passion and don't listen to fucking anyone. Follow your passion and fucking blinkers on like you're in flipping horses, like that. Do you know what I mean? And that's one advice I'd say, don't listen to anybody. If you want to do it, just go and do it. Because it's sort of done.
Class. Excellent. Thanks for your time, man.
That's all right.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you.